It's your time to Ed Up with America's leading higher education podcast network, the Ed Up Experience, where we make education your business. This is Ed Up Legal with your host, Patty Roberts. She's Dean at St. Mary's School of Law, and she's going to be leading conversations about legal education in today's world. Now let's hear from your host, Patty Roberts.
Welcome to Ed Up Legal. This is Patty Roberts from St. Mary's University School of Law. And today I have two professionals from the law firm practice group at Major, Lindsay, and Africa. And I should probably start first by introducing Jeffrey A. Lowe, who is the global practice leader of the law firm practice group, and also the managing partner of the Washington, D.C. office and leader of the Washington, D.C. partner practice group. And we also have Rue Bott. He's a partner in the New York Associate Practice Group of Major, Lindsay, and Africa. And many of our listeners who are from the legal education community may not know what Major, Lindsay, and Africa does. So if one of you can share that with us.
Sure, I'll take that one. We are the world's largest legal recruiting firm. You might have also heard us referred to as headhunters. And what we do is we work with lawyers who are typically out of law school and help them find jobs either at law firms or in private practice at companies.
So would lawyers who were interested in making a move reach out to you, or do you reach out to them? How does that work?
Sure, it really works both ways. Many of the people that we work with have reached out to us, but sometimes either a corporation or a law firm has given us assignment to find a specific kind of lawyer. And then we'll start reaching out affirmatively to lawyers out there.
Well, at least what I'm reading in the news, you must have no shortage of work to do right now.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I call it the pandemic miracle. We, like so many other businesses at the start of the pandemic, thought that things were really going to take a very bad turn. And, you know, we saw for probably 6 to 10 weeks a real downturn in hiring. But I would say by the either the beginning of May or the end of May of 2020, it became clear to us that the legal industry, you know, far from suffering, was actually starting to see tremendous signs of life. And they ended up with many firms having their best year ever in 2020. And then 2021 was even significantly better than that for most firms. So it's really been a pleasant surprise for those who are directly in the legal industry and companies like ours that service them.
So you work mostly with lawyers who have been practicing for some time or are partners in law firms already. But the question that I often get being a law school dean is, well, all these lawyers all these students are going to law school now. There's a huge application boost last year. And, you know, are there going to be enough jobs for these lawyers once they graduate law school? And Rue, maybe you can speak to that.
Sure. I mean, I think we are seeing that there is an unprecedented demand for legal services nationwide and frankly worldwide. And so we do feel like there are going to be plenty of jobs available. You know, you need to be strategic about your job search and what you're looking for. But I think that the demand is extremely high. I'm hearing from clients every day that they're reaching out to 3Ls to work part-time right now because things are so busy.
Wow.
And firms are looking to expand the type of candidates that they typically look at because they want to make sure that they're able to service their clients.
So do you think with the increased demand for legal talent that that will help do something I know that's very important to all of us, and that is increase the diversity in the profession?
Absolutely. We saw as a result of the national conversations about race in 2020, we saw law firms look specifically at their diversity practices and what they can do to attract and retain diverse talent. And now, in addition to that, with the increased demand, firms are scrutinizing even more about what can they do to make sure they expand the type of candidate that applies to their firm. So whether that's through affinity group initiatives or that sort of thing, I've had these conversations almost weekly with law firms.
Well, good. So hopefully there'll be enough jobs or more than enough jobs, and they'll be increasingly filled by more diverse candidates. So as experts in employment of lawyers, you talk to tremendous numbers of firms and businesses about what they're looking for in graduates and lawyers. What are some of the skills that you think we as law schools should be focusing on and students should focus on honing so that they become most marketable once they're out?
That's a great question. The thing is, many employers, they are going to still focus on your coursework and the grades, because that is just a metric that every employer is going to look at. So I tell every law student this is the most important metric that someone must consider. But beyond that, you know, your drafting skills, your critical thinking skills are really important, and being able to showcase those in your interviews, particularly those critical thinking skills, is extremely important. This is a social profession, right? We enjoy speaking with each other and being motivated by each other. So it's really important to come in to these meetings and be able to articulate why you're interested in a type of opportunity or firm, and being able to really show off those critical thinking skills.
You know, in addition to that, Rue, and this is for people even at the very senior levels of the profession, and this is something that I remind everyone that I'm working with, you know, who are typically partners in law firms. They've been practicing for 20 or 30 years. When they're interviewing for a position for the first time, there are some real high level things that you need to remember when you're going into any interview. And, you know, number one, what is always be positive, 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 positive. There's nothing that lands worse in an interview than any sort of negativity, no matter how unhappy you might be with your current situation or your current job. You absolutely cannot bring that to the interview setting, because it gets noticed and it is a real negative factor for the people doing the hiring. Secondly, you know, it's really important at all levels to show people that you genuinely love what you do and you're excited to be a lawyer and you want to be part of their team. And, you know, you think being a lawyer is the greatest thing in the world. Now, even if you don't, you don't have to say
make
that.
Make it till you make it, right?
And for that 30 minutes or an hour, it is. It's the greatest thing ever. And then lastly, you know, I can't underestimate how important it is to do your homework in the interview setting. There are so many people who take the interview for granted. And, you know, maybe you will have several interviews and a number of opportunities, but it becomes very apparent to people like us and the law firms who are looking at a lot of people that, you know, this person hasn't spent 5 seconds on our website, either reading the bios of the people with whom they're interviewing or understanding what the firm is all about. Now, maybe, you know, when I graduated from law school 30 years ago, we literally didn't even have the internet. So it was a little bit more of a challenge, but in
the binders in Dean Kaplan's office.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly right. But in 2022, there is absolutely no reason not to have been able to do your homework on any employment opportunity before you walk in the door.
Yeah, just to add to that, those are great points, Jeff. What I hear often from employers is, you know, I this person's definitely smart enough to join us, but I don't understand why they'd be interested in our firm. They didn't articulate it at all. And it was just clear that the candidate was desperate to get any job, but wasn't really very specific about what type of opportunity they were looking for. So that motivation, being able to articulate why you're motivated to look at any type of firm, is probably the most crucial part of the interviewing process.
Well, and I'm going to just add, as a legal educator, that practice, practice, practice. Having mock interviews is a great idea. If you want to make sure that when you're first asked, well, why big law or why Boston, that you don't give an answer that's going to come off poorly because you haven't really given it any thought, or because you have an answer that might be less interesting to an employer than you think it will be. Wanting to pay your loans off, not a good answer, you know? So just having those, taking advantage of those mock interview opportunities that your schools offer or that your mentors offer, or even just do it for each other, you know, or with faculty or your peers. So we hear a lot about soft skills. And which is like a misnomer because they're like the most important skills. And why would you call them soft skills? But people talk a lot about that. And I know that, Jeff, you said this is a social profession. And so do you have any advice for future candidates, no matter where they are in the practice, in developing those skills or highlighting those skills or even, you know, activities to engage in so that they continue to improve them?
Sure. You know, I think one thing that's really important, and I've really come to realize this over the course of my own career, is being open to and seeking feedback on your soft skills and just yourself generally. The reality is nobody's going to care more about you and your career than you will, except maybe your mom. And, you know, everyone else has their own life to live. And so they're not going to be so focused on your own personal development. And so I think it's really important at a young age to be seeking the feedback from how you're landing and how your performance is viewed by the people who you're working for. If you just wait for it, I can tell you at my firm, and I think this was true of many firms, I got one performance review a year, and someone would come into my office. You know, I was a first year associate or a second year associate. It was typically the practice leader of the group, and he always seemed in a rush and uncomfortable. And he'd spend about 10 minutes with me reading a paragraph and then leaving. And that was it for an entire year of my performance. And so I urge people to get really comfortable asking, you know, and you can also ask your peers if you're comfortable with it and you are strong enough to take the criticism, but the people with whom you're working for, take the time, especially in down moments, to ask them, how am I doing? You know, how did I handle this particular project? Are you comfortable with how I'm interacting with you or others? And being open to it, I think that's really important, being open to it. And then trying to grow from that process. Rue, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's really great feedback. Asking for feedback is always helpful. In terms of places to engage, you know, we're finally, hopefully, coming out of the pandemic. I encourage law students especially to go to every networking event that they can. I think that networking is an important tool that every a lawyer should have as part of their skill set. And it's important to hone those skills early on. And law school is a great place to do that because you get invited to probably the most networking events you ever will in your entire career. So go to these events and be open to speak to people. People go to those events in order to connect and talk to others, right? So try to be as shameless as you can about it and really reach out to folks, get to know them. Brush up on your informational interviewing skills. But I think all of that is incredibly important and essential for lawyers to hone that skill set, especially as they progress in their career and eventually be in a position where they need to build a book of business or anything like that. So it's a skill that can be honed in law school, but you're going to use it forever.
You know, it's a really great point, Rue, because the skills for being considered a great associate are very different than some of the skills that you need to become a successful partner. And the crazy thing about it is you can be a superstar associate who is not necessarily networking with anyone because the partners with whom you're working are just asking you to do their work. Just do my work, just do my work, do my work, do my work. And they don't want you reaching out to other people and networking and trying to develop your own things because they like that captive audience in you. And then what happens is you're such a great associate, they make you partner, but now as a partner, they want you to develop business. And you haven't spent the last 8 to 10 years, you know, honing any of those skills that you might need to develop business. And if you're not cognizant of that at an early age, it becomes very, very difficult for the people who are then 33 or 35 to suddenly turn on that gene and become a, you know, a great business developer. So that's an excellent point.
Just to add to that point, one piece of advice that I would give any young law student right now is keep tabs on your peers, because they will, everyone is going to move in a different direction. Some people will go into law, big law, some will go into government, others will end up going in-house, but that is going to be the roster of contacts that you will consult throughout your career. And so knowing and keeping tabs on those people, which is much easier in this day and age with LinkedIn and that sort of thing, but really staying in contact with those folks is going to be extremely beneficial for your career.
Yeah. Can I add one other thing to that too? Speaking of LinkedIn, you know, when LinkedIn, I remember when LinkedIn started, it was sort of like maybe Facebook for old business people. And like, it really yeah. wasn't a thing originally. People didn't know what to do with it. And I think many still don't, but I can tell you many, many people are on it now, a huge percentage of the industry. And when you have some downtime, if you haven't created a LinkedIn profile for yourself yet, you really need to do that. And, you know, put in the information there about your background, the projects that you've worked on and things like that, because I think a lot of employers will look at that to just, you know, see if they can find out anything more about you. And so, you know, do what my adult children did, you know, start reaching out to your friends' parents if you don't know any people in industry and linking with them, and they'll be more than happy to link with you and start creating connections.
Absolutely. There's so much great advice that you're giving here. Before I turn to the partnership you have with Barbary, that's new and will be of real interest to law students, let me ask you this question. I think a lot of times law students are thinking, oh, I've got to figure out what I want to do in my legal career, what area I want to practice in. And of course, we know there are no majors or things like that. And you can try jobs as much to, or summer jobs or internships, externships, as much to figure out what you don't want to do as what you do want to do. But for those attorneys or soon to be attorneys who are nervous that, you know, whatever they pick right out of the gate is going to be where they are forever, can you just reassure them that and let us know, what is the life of a lawyer like these days as far as the progression through different positions?
Sure. I guess like every stereotype or whatever you want to call it, there is a kernel of truth in that, in the sense that when you start in big law especially, right, what you start out as, whether it's as a transactional attorney or a litigator or whatever it may be, it's extremely hard to retool into a different place. Generally, that's because, especially in New York where I am, you know, folks are specialized almost from the beginning, right? That is the way to get your clients to pay the higher rates. You have specialized attorneys that are only focused on structured finance, for example, or something like that. So it is a little bit harder to transition out of those practice areas if you ultimately decide that's not what you want to do because of the way that the market works. People will look at you laterally only as opposed to coming in as an entry-level attorney. That's not to say it doesn't happen. It happens, and it happens quite a bit. Usually that's through people who have networked their way into a different type of role. So it's all coming full circle here.
But I love that.
But generally speaking, you know, these are questions that you should be asking yourself. And it's funny you brought up the Barbary partnership, because that's part of the programming that we're including with Barbary. 10 questions to ask yourself before you choose a practice area. So it's important to think a little bit about what you want to achieve in terms of your career, because the type of firm, if you're looking in private practice, the type of firm that you start your career in is going to be somewhat determinative of the rest of your career if you follow a more traditional route. So it's really important that one else even are thinking about this now.
Absolutely. And if you can use your summers to try to explore some different opportunities, you know, whether it be litigation versus transactional. I mean, those, you know, in law firms and, you know, big or small, I think those are typically, you know, the biggest distinction, which way do you want to go? I mean, I knew for me, I didn't really like litigation. I didn't really like doing research and writing briefs. I never felt like I looked at, I don't know if you still have squibs, Patty, but, you know, you had to look at all these different cases and, you know, figure out whether or not you looked. I never felt like I looked at all of them and that somebody was going to come into court and find some, you know, obscure case from some obscure district. And I couldn't sleep at night. But corporate work is usually a lot of drafting and deals and things like that, and much less focused on research. And I found for me, you know, that was my calling and that was my home. And so even just figuring that out was very helpful. But we totally get that it's hard. It's really hard to do it from law school. And if you can, seek out people who are doing it and ask them questions to at least get some idea of which way you think you might like to lean.
So your work in the headhunting field has been more with experienced attorneys. But I was absolutely thrilled when I read recently a press release that you're partnering with Barbary to do more educating and professional development work for law students. So please share with us information about this new partnership between Major Lindsay in Africa and Barbary.
Sure. So this is part of Major Lindsay in Africa's larger program called MLA for Life, where we want to act as career counselors for lawyers pretty much from when they start practicing towards all the way to retirement. Given that we focus primarily only on legal recruiting, right? We know this industry inside and out. And there's a lot of insight that we can provide to law students, particularly law students that don't come from a family of lawyers or don't know a lot of lawyers, where we can help them sort of map out their careers or at least give them a roadmap of benchmarks to look for if they're trying to achieve certain goals. We have always been talking to law schools around the country, but our partnership with Barbary allows us to access many, many, many more students as opposed to the ones where we're just locally accessible. Right. So as part of our partnership with Barbary, we're going to be including several programs as part of their curriculum. One is what I talked about earlier, 10 questions to ask when selecting a practice area, because, again, whether you want to go in-house, whether you want to work in San Francisco or all these sort of things, you know, it's a lot of it is going to be determinative on the practice area that you choose from the get-go. And we have some tools to help you assess what type of practice area might be a good fit for you. In addition to that, we're going to help law students figure out sort of the mysticism of OCI. OCI is different at every firm, and particularly for law students when they're looking at the firms, it's hard to distinguish the names. They all just look like names to them, right? And it's hard to distinguish how these firms are a little bit different. So
I'm going to just interject for a second and say OCI is on-campus interviews for those who may not know.
Sorry.
Let's demystify from the start, right?
Yeah. On-campus interviewing, which is a grueling process for many students. And it's sometimes, I remember when I was dealing with OCI and I had no idea. I was just putting names down because I was like, that looks like a good firm, you know, because at some point, you know, it's hard to determine what all these firms do and what types of people are attracted to which type of firm. So we're happy to use our expertise and knowledge and share that with law students through Barbary. We'll also be helping law students, you know, figure out best tips for their resume, how to navigate your job search if you're looking outside of big law as well. You know, there's some, and as well as interviewing tips, mock interviews, that sort of thing. So we're really excited to bring this program to the law students at the national scale through Barbary.
Well, that's great. And then it gets you familiar with the talent coming up, and then they'll also look to you when they want to make changes in their careers. So that's terrific.
Yeah, I think Jeff can speak to this. So many, when they get to the partner level and the in-house level, attorneys know who Major Lindsay is, but we're always educating the entry level, you know, the new ones that are just new to the profession. So this will be great for us to get to know them too.
So in addition to doing legal search work and headhunting, as some people might call it, and then this educating from beginning to end career, do you all also do kind of career coaching, or is it just at the time of transition for people?
Sure, we absolutely do. We have a department here that focuses on career coaching. And And, you know, we like to describe ourselves as kind of a foot wide and 50 miles deep. If it touches the legal industry, we do it. So whether it's in-house placement, law firm placement, coaching, in-house positions for, you know, chief operating officers and other things at law firms. We do law firm staffing, and that could be legal assistants, paralegals, temporary lawyers, and the like. So if it's touching the law, we're in it in some capacity.
So that's an interesting point about the some of those tangential positions that people don't always think about, like a COO at a law firm. And it makes me wonder, what are you seeing along the lines of chief technologists and law firm technology employment opportunities out there?
Sure. There's a huge evolution going on, you know, in every industry, and particularly with the law firms. A funny thing happened. I describe it this way. A funny thing happened on the way to the pandemic. These old stodgy firms were suddenly faced with having to operate in a technological environment. And it was really quite remarkable how quickly the law firms adopted to doing everything via Zoom.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the industry experts will tell you they made a 10-year leap in 1 year, and they got really comfortable. And they got really comfortable working at home and working with Teams or Zoom or WebEx or whatever feature you were working with. And it's because, you know, they had to, if they were going to be able to service those clients and, you know, keep the place running, they were going to have to adapt. And so I think the law firms are actually coming out of the pandemic, and let's all hope we are, in a much stronger technological position and degree of acceptance than they ever went into it. And I think, you know, not surprisingly, it was typically the older members of the firm who are most resistant to it. But now that they've seen that, you know, they can stay at home too and do it, or they, you know, they can be at their second home, wherever that might be, and spend 6 months or a year there. And generally speaking, the firms really don't care that much as long as the work is getting done. So there's been a tremendous, tremendous shift in this industry, you know, caused by the pandemic. I think we were going to get there someday anyway, but it was probably going to be more like in 2030 than in 2021.
I think that's the same thing for legal education. We moved forward about 10 years in a year out of sheer necessity. So one of the things that that you made me think of there is the retirements that are on the horizon in the legal profession. So I read about, you know, the boomers and they're retiring, and the pandemic might have made more retire than we're going to otherwise. And so what does the legal profession look like as that evolution happens?
Sure. You know, I think it initially did increase the number of retirements on the front end when it was still an incredibly scary time. And I think people who were on the cusp probably thought, you know what, I just can't deal with it anymore. I was going to retire in a year anyway, or 2 years, I'm out. But again, as the firms got more and more adept at dealing with the technology, I think partners and senior people who were otherwise thinking about retiring because they really didn't want to live where their law firm was located, they wanted to go move to Phoenix, or they wanted to go move to Florida or Texas, they realize now, you know what, I can probably do that. And my firm's probably gonna let me do that. So I can kind of move to another phase of my life, but without giving up my job. And whether it's in full-time capacity or part-time capacity, I think it's really, it's gonna have the effect of lengthening the careers of many people.
I think you're right. We're seeing the same thing, I think, in legal education. And I'm going to ask you all about your predictions for the coming decade in legal education and legal employment. But first, I mean, this is such low-hanging fruit. I have to ask you, Rue, were you a renowned DJ before you were a lawyer, or did that come after you were a lawyer?
Wow, I love talking about this. Thanks for asking.
How could I not? What kind of a host would I be if I didn't ask?
So for the listeners, I am part of a DJ outfit called Occupy the Disco here in New York, and we've been going strong. We're celebrating our 10-year anniversary this year. I've always been into music, was always into being in charge of music for everyone in my household. It just sort of came naturally. And I started this about 10 years ago. I started at MLA 13 years ago. So the DJing came later. But it's
a good stress reliever, I bet.
Oh, absolutely. It's great. It's really great. And I enjoy it so much. And I'm grateful to be at a place that allows me to, you know, cultivate my passions as well.
Now, do they make you like do all the firm parties? Do you have to?
I've done a few.
I hope they pay you for that.
Although I don't know that I'd use the word make. I mean, I think there's some element of volunteering there,
oh, absolutely.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah. You know, but it's been fun. It's been fun to share that with my colleagues as well.
What's your favorite kind of music?
Disco and house music.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I'm a 90s kid, so.
90s kid, yeah. Well, I know Jeff and I can look back fondly. 90s were okay, but the 80s, now that's some good music right there. For listeners who wouldn't know this otherwise, Jeff and I met in law school. He was 2 years ahead of me, and he married one of my dearest friends who graduated between the two of us. So we go way, way, way back. I knew him when he was just a big law associate. But look at him now. And so let's wrap up with each of you sharing what your predictions are for how legal education and the profession or employment will be evolving in the coming decade.
Sure, I'll start with legal education, and I'm sure you know this better than I do, Patty, but I mean, I see a huge push to online opportunities for legal education and the ability, I think, to get a law degree completely online. We've also seen some legislation and talk recently about third years being able to take the bar exam sooner, which might lead to increased employment opportunities at an earlier date. I know for as long as I've been around, there's been talk about making a law degree a 2-year program rather than a 3-year program. And there might be a continued push for that as well.
And to add to that, I think, you know, the majority of the candidates that I work with are minorities of some sort. What I find and what I've been hearing is there is obviously that increased push to enroll diverse students into law schools. We want to change the face of the legal industry quite a bit. And we're seeing law firms invest in pre-law programs at colleges to get certain individuals to apply to law school. I think there's going to be a continued scrutiny, but also resources available to try and make sure that folks are motivated to get into the legal industry that may come from marginalized or underprivileged backgrounds. So I'm hopeful that that is going to make a big impact in the next 10 years, in addition to the conversations that folks will be having in school and the curriculum. And I'm grateful for that because, you know, when I was in law school, I was one of the few minorities in my school, and it was the first time in my life that I kind of felt that. So it's exciting to be part of the change on this side of it as being a partner at MLA, but also to see it coming down the pike, so to speak, from what all this investment and conversations, the way that they're going.
Well, thank you both. I certainly share your views about what's coming down the pike. I'll do two shameless plugs because I get to do that because I get to run the podcast. But the first is, of course, online education. Yes, it is expanding at law schools, and we'll have the first fully online ABA approved JD program starting this fall with a pilot cohort of 25. So we're super excited about that. But secondly, when your firms want to invest in pipeline programs with the most amazing Hispanic students in the country, you know where to find us. We're at St. Mary's. So Thank you both so much. I really appreciate your letting us know more about Major Lindsay in Africa and your new partnership with Barbary and all the really great advice that you gave to law students and lawyers navigating their professional career.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
This has been another episode of EdUp Legal with your host, Patty Roberts. EdUp Legal is part of the EdUp Experience podcast network, bringing you the brightest and most influential minds across higher education and beyond. Here at EdUp, we make education your business.